Welcome. This is Cheryl Fusco Johnson welcoming you to Writers' Voices. We have a very exciting show for you today. Our guest is Melissa Tozzetti. She's the founder of an online magazine called Savvy Living, and she also has a book that came out last year. So she's an author, speaker, and teacher, and her co-author for the book Living the Savvy Life, The Savvy Woman's Guide to Smart Spending and Rich Living, was Kevin Gibbons, and he's the managing editor of her online magazine as well. At business women's conferences in San Francisco and Sacramento, Melissa has chaired panel discussions on balanced spending and financial security. She teaches courses on savvy living in the San Francisco Bay Area and also at Chabot College in Hayward, California. Melissa also teaches Kung Fu and Fearless Fitness classes. Her hobbies include traveling with husband Paul and son Dante, horseback riding, gardening, and cooking. Welcome to the show, Melissa.
Well, thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it.
Well, I think a lot of people will be interested in what you have to say about living wisely and spending wisely. In your book, Living the Savvy Life, you mention your grandmother and that she kind of set you on this path of seeking a balanced life. And I'm interested in what sort of savvy lessons she taught you.
Sure. You know, I was blessed to have been raised literally by a village. My aunts and uncles and my grandparents, they all lived within walking distance of our house, and I am still especially close to my grandmother. In fact, her 88th birthday is tomorrow. And I was raised on a farm, and many of the lessons that I learned from her really I kind of took and ran with as an adult when I started, you know, kind of crafting this lifestyle for myself, you know, going back and remembering the things that she taught me. One of the biggest lessons that I learned from her is really this idea of taking care of your possessions or taking care of your money once it transitions from cash to a possession, right? Mm-hmm. We try to be really good with our cash, but, you know, are we taking care of our clothes to make sure that they last as long as possible so that your investment in them goes as far as possible? You know, kind of the same with your car. Are you really taking care of it to make sure that, you know, it lasts for years and years so that, again, you're not having to shell out money every 5-6 years to replace it because you haven't taken care of it?
You know, that's really a good point, because a lot of times people get caught up in the excitement of the purchase, mm-hmm. and tracking down just the right, you know, gown or car or whatever it is, you know, but they don't spend as much time having that lasting satisfaction from the possession. So I think that was
right.
Really
and
a good lesson.
I think that's what happens too when when we have too much. There's a, you know, it's not about doing without at all. It's just about really appreciating everything that you do have, and again, making sure that it lasts as long as possible, taking care of it. You know, my grandparents really did a great job with my brother and I of instilling that in us. And I'll tell you what, the other thing that my grandmother taught me was to take care of my skin. And if I look like she does now at 88, I'm going to be thrilled.
Well, those are some good lessons.
Yes.
Well, it sounds like you have a lot of interests with your fitness, you know, work and teaching and gardening and horseback riding and your family. I'm curious how you got interested enough in savvy living to make that be your career.
Well, you know, it kind of evolved. Sometimes I think that the universe has plans for you, and they let you in on it at the last minute. I was, you know, I write about it in the book. I wasn't taught about money as a kid. You know, I my parents are phenomenal; they're amazing, but it just didn't dawn on them to teach me about money, and I didn't learn it in school. And what I now know is that that's the case for most people. We're not taught in school about money. Our parents, they don't teach us about money. And so consequently, there's so many of us that are, you know, sent to the school of hard knocks. You know, we have to learn the hard way. And so as I dug myself out, you know, of this particular situation and started looking for ways to have make what I earned go further, and I spent about 2 years in frugality purgatory, where I kind of took frugality to the nth degree, and I started trying to find this balance, which has turned into this, you know, this lifestyle, this savvy living lifestyle, and that's really kind of how that came to be. And I started to realize, you know, I can't be the only one who is struggling. You know, there's got to be more than just me. And so I initially it started as a print publication, a quarterly print publication, and then in 2006 we went online, and then I wanted to do take it to the next level. We did the book, and then of course in addition to that we do classes. And now there really is a place that you can go and learn day-to-day money management, and that's at our seminars and our classes.
Well, it does seem like an odd oversight that kids can graduate, at least when I graduated from high school, you could graduate from high school without knowing how to balance a checkbook.
Correct. But you know all about the War of 1812.
Yeah, that's strange, isn't it?
Yeah, and you know, and no offense to history classes, I'm a huge history buff. It's just what's happening is so much of the recession, or so much of the issues that we're having with the economy that we continue to have with the economy, you know, we have our own, we have to take personal accountability for that as well. There were issues in the government, there were issues with the banks, but we also, so many Americans, we overextended ourselves. We got ourselves into situations that we couldn't get ourselves out of, and a lot of that is out of ignorance. And now, you know, we had that pain of the last 3-4 years. So instead of potentially, you know, swinging back to where we've got the money and we're overspending again, now's a great time to really figure out and to learn how to make, how to make what you have, turn that into like a strong financial foundation, focus your spending on what's most important rather than just spending.
Well, I think this might be a good time to ask you, what are the six key savvy habits? In your book, Living the Savvy Life, you mentioned that there are six key habits. Would you like to share some of those with our listeners?
Sure. You know, the very first one is, you know, pay yourself first. That's what, you know, financial gurus will always tell you. That idea is basically of putting money into a retirement account and into an emergency savings account. And the best way to do that really is to have money automatically put into those accounts. So you don't even have to touch it. You don't have to think about it. One of the things that we have a tendency to do is think that, well, you know, maybe I want to put more money into savings, so I don't want to automate it. I just, you know, once I pay my bills, I'm going to, you know, instead of putting maybe 50 every time, maybe I'll want to put 75 or 100. Well, what ends up happening is there's always something that kind of gets in the way. There's always something else to spend that money on, and so consequently, if you don't have it automatically done, no money ends up going in there. And so paying yourself first is key. Savvy habit number two is all about, savvy habit number two is about tracking your spending. And to me, this is really key. I love talking about personal finance. I love, you know, managing my money, but I'm not the type of person that can remember that how much money I have in my account at any given time, because I will easily forget that dog food was on a great sale, so I bought 2 bags instead of just one, and I also filled my gas tank for that extra trip that I took to go see my family. So I have to, on a daily basis, go in and track what I spent the previous day and see what cleared, so I know exactly how much money I have on any given day. Otherwise, like just the best of them, I will find myself in so much financial trouble. So,
do you feel that many of the people you've advised actually do that?
Yes, and it's in this day and age with online banking, you would think that you wouldn't have to do that anymore. And actually, it's more important than ever, because if you think about all the different ways that money leaves your bank account, it's not just you wrote a check anymore or you got cash out of your ATM. There are automatic withdrawals from your account, bill pay, monthly withdrawals, annual withdrawals. There's just so many different hands in your checking account that if you're not tracking it on a daily basis, it's just too easy to overspend, and then then you're owing the bank $35 every time and late fee and overdrawn fees. It's a bummer. And it's not fun, but when you get into the habit of it, it will literally take you less than 3 minutes a day to do it.
Well, you do give the example in the book, too, of your husband maybe having ordered some books online, but they took a while for them to go through, and so suddenly there's a charge that he, you know, kind of forgot about by the time.
Exactly. And then all of a sudden, money that he thought was there is no longer there. And then he's having to scramble and figure out what he's going to do. And so yeah, it's just as I said, you know, it's not fun, it's not sexy, but it's one of the most important and impactful things that you can do. And you would be amazed at the difference that that makes in your finances and having control versus being at the whim, you know?
Well, being aware, you know, of what you're spending, if you did check that every day, it does seem like you would think about it the next day as you were making purchases. Like, am I going to be glad at the end of the day?
That's a happy byproduct, correct.
Yeah. Okay, so what's the third savvy habit?
So the third savvy habit, it's one of my favorites. I talk about it all the time, and that's the idea of sitting down and paying all of your bills on payday before spending a dime on anything else. Now, you have you have agreed with these companies that send you bills. You've agreed that you've created basically an agreement of payment, and so you need to that sounds so strong. On payday, sitting down and paying all those, taking care of all those obligations, while you still have that money to take care of them is key. But in addition to that, my suggestion is to also go out and buy your groceries for that pay period and fill your car up with gas, because those are your three needs. Those are, you know, you need to feed yourself, you need to, you know, either buy your bus pass or your subway pass or fill your car up with gas so you can get to work to earn that next paycheck, and you need to take care of your financial obligations. Now, once all that is taken care of, you know exactly how much money you have left over to spend as you please. So again, there's no surprises. You have complete control. And, you know, as I say this, I know that somebody who's listened to this for the first time might be thinking, my God, this woman's crazy. Who's got time for all this stuff? But the fact is that as you start to do it, you know, you take these one step at a time, and as you start to implement them, they become habit, they become routine, and it's amazing. You don't even think about it. It's just the way that you do things.
Well, actually, it's not a matter of time, because you're going to have to pay the bills, and that, you know, whenever you do it, it'll take that same amount of time. And you're going to have to grocery shop. It just is sort of making things scheduled and very organized. And it does seem to me as though then your mind would be free the rest of the week. You know that that's been taken care of, and you don't have that niggling thing of, you know, you're doing something else, and all of a sudden you think, did I pay that bill on time? Is it overdue?
You know, so. I've been writing a lot this last 2 weeks about what I call mind clutter, which is exactly what you're talking about. It's the little details in the back of your head that kind of weigh you down, of the things that need to be done or the things that are worrying you. And these types of habits and routines take care of all of that.
Well, then we should hear the fourth savvy habit.
Fourth savvy habit, another favorite of mine, and that's the idea of actually setting financial goals. I'm a goal setter by nature. I believe in creating goals. And what creating goals is, it's the difference between wishing for something and making it happen. So I talk to people all the time who want to go on a trip or want to buy a new house, and you know, they're talking to me about this hope, but I realize that I've also had the same conversation with them for the last 5 years. They just haven't made it happen. So and I talk about it in the book, there's ways to change that from it just being a wish to it actually being a goal, where you go from wishing to actually taking action and making those goals happen. So it's semantics, but it's a big difference.
Okay, and so I think we're on the fifth habit.
Sure, the fifth habit is to know when to invest and when to bargain shop. When I was pitching the book, a lot of the literary agents kept coming back to me and saying, "Oh, we don't want to write it. We don't want to publish a book on or represent a book on frugality." And I kept kind of screaming at these rejection letters, saying, "It's not about frugality. It's this idea, and really the overall philosophy of savvy living is to focus your spending on what is most important to you, and you can do that by saving in the areas that are not as important to you." So this idea of, you know, knowing when to invest and when the bargain shop is really individualized. So for me, for example, certain things that I am willing to invest in is, you know, travel is very important to me. My husband and I love to travel. I'm going to invest in those trips. What is not as important to me is cars. For us, you know, cars are just a tool for us to get from point A to point B. So we buy reliable used cars. I mean, we're not, you know, not spending any money on cars, But for us, you know, driving, it's not necessary for us to drive a BMW or a Mercedes. You know, I'm perfectly happy with my little Nissan, and my husband loves his, you know, little Scion. And that allows us, by not having car payments anymore, and keeping our cars for, in fact, my car is, I think, 15 years old, and it's working beautifully still. By not having car payments anymore, we are able to focus more of our money on travel. So it's you know, and whether it's your saving on clothes so you can invest it elsewhere, or here's probably a better example. My mom lives on 3.5 acres in Fresno, California, and she's got a huge lawn. It is a wise investment for her to buy a riding lawnmower. Now, when I go and I speak at in San Francisco, most of the people that live in San Francisco, if they have a lawn, it's maybe about 10 foot by 10 foot. It doesn't make sense for them to buy a riding lawnmower. A small little, even just like a manual push mower would work for them. So it's that idea of just kind of weighing your options and really thinking about each item versus just kind of mindlessly buying. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
And I just want to remind listeners that today, you're listening to Writers' Voices. This is Cheryl Fusco-Johnson standing in for Monica Hadley and her mom. And our guest today is a very interesting woman who knows a lot about savvy spending. Her name is Melissa Tozzetti, and she's written a book called Living the Savvy Life, The Savvy Woman's Guide to Smart Spending and Rich Living. Now, before you share your sixth savvy habit, I'm curious why you decided to gear this book as particularly to women.
Because I write about what I know. it just made sense to me that was my audience. That when I originally started the print publication, the print magazine, my audience, it really was geared towards women. My goal was to write a magazine for the rest of us who couldn't afford the Vogue lifestyle. And maybe didn't even necessarily want one. You know, it was the idea of creating this affordable lifestyle and one to be very proud of. You know, it's not about frugality, but it's about, you know, just kind of picking and choosing, you know, quality over quantity. And so it just continued to evolve and continue to speak to a female audience. But I will say that our next book is actually going to be geared towards men.
Because you do have a male co-author.
Just so that we have an opportunity, because we have a message that's universal. It'll be a very similar book, but maybe just not talk quite so much about beauty.
So will that again be with Kevin?
Correct, yeah. He'll be the lead on that particular one. And that's also going to give him... Kevin is a phenomenal speaker, and he's an incredible teacher. And it's going to give him more of a platform to be able to go out and to reach out to the other half of America that we feel... You know, our goal is to be the teachers, is to be, you know, there's money is not taught here, and our goal is to be the ones who finally teach that day-to-day spending. And so we don't want it to just be geared towards women. We want to be able to help, you know, everyone in the U.S. And so that's our plan.
Okay,
to change America.
That's great. One spender at a time, one
exactly.
Purchaser at a time. So let's not forget to have you share the sixth of your key habits for a savvy life. I don't think we've done the sixth one yet, have we?
Okay. You know, the sixth habit is really just this idea of spending money on the things you want. And the way I kind of introduce this habit, whenever I speak, I open up with, you know, various questions. And one of the questions I ask is, you know, how many of you have ever walked into a place like Target or Costco, I'm trying to think of, you know, national stores, you know, any type of kind of big box type of store, and you walked in solely to purchase something like toothpaste, but you walk out finding yourself pushing a cart loaded full of bags back to your car. And that's this habit of, you know, just kind of things jumping into your cart, kind of, again, mindlessly consuming. And so savvy habit number six is really to just spend money on the things you want. Again, it's not about not spending money. It's about focused spending.
What I like about your book and your philosophy is you're really encouraging people to get in touch with what is important to them.
Correct. There's an entire chapter in the book dedicated to, you know, asking questions of yourself, because everybody's life is different and everybody has, you know, different things are important to them. So it's very individual. There's no way that we could write, you know, a black and white, here's how you do it, here's what you need to spend your money on. It's just, you know, that's the beauty of being an individual.
But you do have a survey at the back of the book, I believe, that helps people analyze what it is that is important to them so they'll know what to spend and what
to
save on.
Exactly. It's in the book. And we also have an online program, which basically takes the information in the book and it, for lack of a better term, it spoon-feeds you day by day towards creating the savvy life. And the very first thing that we do is we send you that questionnaire, because everything is based on that. Everything is based on you figuring out what is important to you, where do you want to spend your money, okay, figuring out what isn't as important to you, where are the areas that you can start to economize so you can focus your spending on what you really want.
Yeah, and even recognizing that it is a choice.
Correct, yeah.
And that you'd have to make it. You know, somewhere along the line, you have to, I mean, you are every day making that choice of how you're spending
your money. It's about becoming conscious of it, though. And then it just makes you think, you know, every time you pull out your wallet, do you really want this or don't you? And, you know, I'm a big fan. There's the whole latte factor. If you don't, you know, go out and buy that morning cup of coffee, then you can put that money that you would have spent, you know, towards building your wealth. You know, it's a brilliant idea, but for some people, that cup of coffee is really important to them. You know, that interaction that they get at their local, you know, Starbucks or Pete's Coffee or whatever it is. So it has to be individualized.
So do you recommend, let's say that a person has taken this survey and they've figured out what is more important, what is less important. Mm-hmm. Should they tackle all six of your key savvy habits at once, or how do they actually begin?
I am a big, big fan of baby steps. And in fact, that's one of the reasons why we created this online program. You know, you read a book, and let's just say it's our book, it's Living the Savvy Life. You read a book and you get so excited and you want to tackle everything at the same time, but you're overwhelmed because the book really focuses on a bunch of different areas of your life. It focuses on your home, your wardrobe, beauty, food, travel, entertainment. What do you focus on first? Or and of course that, you know, all important money management. Well, you know, I know for me, I've read books in the past and it's like, okay, I get really gung ho and I'm going to change my life, and then I get busy or something happens and I kind of get further and further away from the material in the book, and then I realize that I haven't done any of it. And so with this online program, that's what we've done is it you get an easy to implement email on a daily basis, and it literally just takes you, okay, today do this, okay, tomorrow do this. And so you're guided is really the best way I could describe it.
If a person wasn't able to take your online course, would you say that there's one thing that they, you know, like, how do you think they should start? I guess,
you know, an easy way to do it would just literally be to start start at the beginning. And we did create the chapters in a manner that we felt made the most sense timeline-wise. And so, you know, the first couple of chapters are really about creating that strong financial foundation, because without that, you're just wobbly. And so starting there, you know, starting on maybe that very first savvy habit, pay yourself first. And basically that means when you go to work tomorrow, if you aren't already putting money towards retirement, contact your HR department and start at it. Even if it's just, you know, $10 a paycheck, it's something. It's something. It's important to just start.
Well, I think it's a great idea for anybody to read your book, because I felt that there were interesting tips. There were things that I hadn't come across before, just some, you know, ideas. So whether or not someone feels like they want to embark on a new philosophy about money, I think it's just a way to pick up some different tips. And one of the things that sort of charmed me in a way was you had the advice of developing a money-saving network.
Mm-hmm.
And do you want to explain what that is?
Sure. You know, that is the idea of, you know, if you're lucky enough to have, you know, friends and family nearby, this idea of let's say, I'll give you an example. I own a carpet steam cleaner, and my friend Jana does not. So what she does is when she needs it, she comes over and she borrows my steam cleaner. And in exchange, I am able to get produce from her garden, from her yard. She's got one of the most amazing lemon trees. It's just this exchange, right? My give you another example. Our friend Kevin has my co-author has a lot of different tools and stuff that we've borrowed over the course of time, which means that we didn't have to invest in those particular tools that saved us money. And then in exchange, we've gone over and done, you know, manual labor in Kevin's backyard. You know, it's this idea of you know, exchanging service or tools for each other. So everybody doesn't have to have, you know, a table saw, a carpet cleaner, you don't have to invest in all these different things that you only use occasionally.
Well, what I like about this is my husband and I are, like, very independent. We come from families that were very independent. And I don't think that we have done much of that in the past. Some, you know. But I feel like when you are able to ask people to borrow, you know, can I borrow your truck, your pickup, you know, to make a run to get sand or something like that, it sort of cements the friendship in some ways.
Very much so. You know, it creates community.
Yes, I think that's exactly what I'm thinking is, yeah, it means that you trust that person enough to ask them for help. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, you want to also, they've been generous with you, so then you feel that you especially want to be generous with them, and, you know, so it causes you to then open your heart in a different way.
Right, right. And, you know, some of my happiest childhood memories were of these times where everybody came over and helped us install a fence, or these, you know, an uncle or a family member was moving cattle from one place to another and everybody chipped in. It's to some extent you can use these moments as times to celebrate, or this idea of, you know, in my life I have so many people that are so helpful to me and constantly doing something for me. You know, allowing my friend to borrow my steam cleaner is the least thing that I can do, or stopping by her house to feed her dogs while she's out of town, that's the least thing that I could possibly do for them, and I'm so happy to do it.
It makes me remember an earlier era in my life when my husband and I got married. We've been married over 30 years.
Oh, congratulations.
Thank you. But we didn't have much when we started out, and I remember instead of like a shower, because our friends also didn't have a lot, we had our friends come over for a shower, like we met at a house, and the women cooked together, and we made refreshments that we later served at the wedding, and then the men chopped wood that we later used in our fireplace, and it was, you know, it was like a different kind of a party. It was really fun. Mm-hmm. And I know today a lot of young people just get into so much debt because the idea of ritual for weddings has become very elaborate.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's unfortunate. It kind of and weddings are such an industry.
Yeah, I guess it's like you're saying, you know, you have to pick and choose what is important. Like the couple should decide, like, what do they want to have a budget, and then decide, do they want that to go into the wedding dress, or do they especially like gourmet food, or, you know, what it is that they want. So people have to be sensible. I have another question about networking, and I'm wondering, do you feel that the financial habits of friends are like the fitness habits of friends, and what your friends are doing financially affects you financially?
Sadly, yes, to the nth degree. It's the Joneses, right? It's this idea of keeping up with the Joneses, and I have found myself in this situation in several different ways. I previously worked for a private equity firm. I was the office manager. And it was almost all the executives, they're multimillionaires, and the executive assistants are get paid very well, and they drive very nice cars. And I remember I was driving a Cadillac, a used Cadillac that I loved the car. I absolutely loved the car, but I remember driving in, being a passenger in my friend's little BMW, and it was so new. And I remember getting back in my car and kind of being dissatisfied. And being dissatisfied for about a month and just, you know, kind of begrudging that, you know, that I was driving this car and maybe not something newer. And then all of a sudden, one day, I kind of had this reality check of, yeah, but I travel. And I do all these other things that I'm able to, that are important to me. And if I was locked down with a BMW car payment, there are so many things that I would not be able to do. And so it's you know, you are definitely affected by your friend's spending habits. And sometimes that is, it's the case in that regard, the situation that I had with a car. Sometimes it's in going out. You know, you never know what your friend's financial situations are. And, you know, when you're struggling to make ends meet and everybody's wanting to go out to dinner all the time and go out to drinks all the time, that adds up. And if you're not able to maybe say no occasionally or offer alternatives to, hey, instead of going here, why don't you guys come over and, you know, we'll make drinks at my place or something, you know, something like that where you have a little bit more control, then you're allowing other people to spend your money. And that is a situation I wrote about it in the book. I actually ended up having to end a relationship with a couple that was very difficult for me because they didn't understand. Paul and I were getting ready to, my husband and I were getting ready to remodel our home, and so we were dialing down our lifestyle and really wanted to focus our money on this big project. And I kept trying to explain it to them and kept trying to explain it to them, and they didn't get it, and they weren't as great friends as I thought they were.
So maybe not.
And it's unfortunate. I don't mean to scare anybody off that you're going to have to ditch your friends because they don't have similar spending habits than you do. But you just be very mindful of who's spending your money, you or the people around you.
Oh, that's really interesting. So you felt like this particular couple wasn't flexible enough to do something less expensive when they spent time with you.
Correct. And the situation that I found myself in with them was a bit extreme. And it was heartbreaking because we really, really enjoyed them and still to this day miss their friendship. But, you know, I felt very strongly about that and about, you know, it's sometimes when we went out with them, we were doing stuff that I didn't even necessarily wanted to do. And it literally was allowing them to spend my money for me.
Huh. That's an interesting
way. And so, again, I don't want to scare anybody off that, you know, by living a savvy life, you're going to have to sever all your relationships. That's not the case at all. It's just about being mindful.
Yeah, being aware.
Yeah,
because
exactly.
It might be that there would be special occasions where you would want to spend that much money when you go out. But you want to have friends that are flexible enough that they're willing to be creative and, you know, think about other ways to spend time together where you didn't have to spend a lot of money.
Exactly, exactly.
So if you haven't already, I think maybe we've touched a little bit. You've said, oh, it's not frugality or excessive frugality. I'm curious, how do you know when you're at the right balance? Because I do know there have been times in my life when I just completely stop spending. I just get scared and I don't spend any money at all. Mm-hmm. And then you find suddenly, you know, your wardrobe is a little ragged and then something comes up. You might have to go on a trip and you don't have clothes because you haven't been buying, you know. So how do you keep yourself from just getting scared and becoming extreme?
You know, that's a good question. And that it's funny because that really was the impetus for me creating the philosophy of save money in the areas that are not as important to you. You know, so you can focus your spending on the areas that are, because that's exactly what I did. I had gotten myself into debt. I had a lot of debt when I moved up from my hometown to the San Francisco Bay Area. And when I got up here, the cost of living difference was ginormous. I don't know if that's a real word or not, but it was ginormous. And what I ended up having to do is I ended up having to have a day job 40 hours a week and then wait tables at night in order to pay down that debt. And so when I finally paid off that debt, it took me about a year, I was so scared of getting myself back into that financial situation that I literally, I think I mentioned it before, I was in frugality purgatory for about 2 years. We didn't spend anything. We were terrified. And then hit that, you know, frugal fatigue, which I think so many people hit during the start of the recession because we tried to dial down too far. And so that's when we started trying to kind of find this balance. And I think like so many things in life, you really kind of have to ask yourself on a daily basis, you know, where do I stand right now? What do I, you know, am I putting money in the bank on a regular basis? Am I spending less than I make? Okay. And literally giving yourself permission, giving yourself an allowance on a regular basis to spend on the things that you want to spend your money on. Again, you, by following savvy habit number one, which is pay yourself first, and savvy habit number three, which is paying all your bills on payday, and, you know, taking care of your food and gas, you will know how much money you have left to spend on a you know, every pay period, and so that does give you a little bit of breathing room. It's really, to me, the only way that I know to give myself that permission to go out to dinners, to buy, you know, to add to my wardrobe. Does that answer your question?
Yes, it does. And the fact that you were in that position before, where you had to have two jobs, I know that's the position of a lot of people today. If you can work your way out of it, I could see where you would want to make a study of how to live a savvy life so that you didn't get back into that.
Right.
You know, so
right.
You can move on.
And again, that, you know, frugality is not, I had glorified it, I think, at one point, you know, and again, you know, my grandparents were frugal. They were Depression era, both sets of grandparents. And I think I had kind of glorified it, but I hadn't lived through it. And I kind of put myself there. You have to find that balance. But if I can stress anything, it is that money should be enjoyed. And the only way to really enjoy it is to create that strong financial foundation, to spend less than you make. But what you have left over to spend, spend it and enjoy it, and with a free heart.
And consciously, so you aren't just picking things up at Target without thinking about, did I really need or want this?
Exactly, exactly.
I want to remind listeners, you're listening to Writer's Voices on KRUU FM 100.1. With us today, we have Melissa Tozzetti, author of Living the Savvy Life, The Savvy Woman's Guide to Smart Spending and Rich Living, although the ideas in the book are for every person, every gender. And I found different little tips throughout your book that I thought were really useful. One thing you mentioned is a lot of adults identify entertainment as something that costs money. You know, you're going to go to a concert or a play or something, you know, where you have to make a little bit of a layout. But that there are also many leisure time activities that are free or almost free, and we tend to overlook those. So what are some of those activities?
You know, the one of the first things I would suggest is go into your closet, open up your closet, and anything that you have purchased for entertainment is sitting right there. Board games, badminton sets, bocce ball sets, anything like that. You know, you already have purchased these items. Spend, you know, challenge yourself to play or use every single one of those items before you pay for entertainment again.
That's a great tip. I actually have a bocce set.
Well, you're Italian, right?
That's right.
Prerequisite.
But I don't know. I've probably used it three times. So maybe.
But you know, it is funny. You get so excited about needing these things and wanting these things. And then once you've played with them once, it's like, okay, so what's the next thing? So, yeah, so just going in and, you know, it's free entertainment right in your closet. But in addition to that, there's all kinds of things. We regularly go to the library and rent movies. I have a five-year-old. And so I love being able to go to the library and check movies out for free. And all kinds of documentaries. I was amazed when I went to the library the very first time, this is about 3 or 4 years ago, to borrow a DVD, and they actually had Kill Bill there. The types of movies that your library carries is shocking.
Well, librarians I have very high respect for, and
I
think they have good taste, so you might underestimate what you would be able to find. Also,
exactly.
My experience has been that the more people request certain types of items, the more the librarian understands the tastes of the people in the area. So it's always good to let your librarian know, you know, what you're kind of interested in, because then they'll find things for you that you might not have found on your own.
Correct, correct. So. And, you know, I'm surprised. I'm lucky enough to be in an area where there's about 4 or 5 libraries within a very short driving distance, and our libraries are really well used. And I remember a time about 10, 15 years ago where a lot of them were getting close to being shut down. Mm. But nowadays, they're packed, and I'm very excited to see that.
Well, libraries are an incredible resource.
Oh, they are. They are. Everybody thank Benjamin Franklin for that.
Yeah. Okay, another tip that I really enjoyed from your book was talking about staycations. I've heard about staycations, and in my mind, somehow, I equated it with you don't let your friends know that you're home, and you just stay home and you do home chores. You know, like you wallpaper your kitchen or something. That was like how I was picturing a staycation, where you're just free to work at home because nobody's interrupting you. But you've had kind of a more luxurious explanation of what a staycation would be. Would you share that with listeners?
Sure. So staycations really became vogue during the gas crisis, when gas prices were, you know, at least in our area, up to almost $5 a gallon. And so people were not taking road trips that they normally would. And so instead people were, you know, quote unquote, vacationing at home. And what our ideas around staycationing is, and this is something that my husband and I have started to do at least a couple times a year, is we clean the house from top to bottom ahead of time. We go to the grocery store and we buy all of our groceries for that staycation. We both really love to cook. I'm Portuguese and he's Italian, so I think it's in our DNA. And so cooking to us is relaxing and fun and entertaining. We get our DVDs or whatever movies that we want to watch, and we plan in advance, are we going to go kind of use our house as a hotel? And then are we going to go to, you know, the Legion of Honor Museum or you know, just kind of pick and choose what activities we're going to do kind of outside the house. But you use your home as your, like I said, as a hotel. When you clean everything in advance, you're not sitting around your home kind of looking in the corners at the cobwebs that are you know, gathering. You're not having the urge to go and grab the vacuum and kind of vacuum up really quick. You're just relaxing. When you've got, you know, all your groceries in advance, you're not having to have that kind of mind clutter of, oh, I've got to go to the groceries, or before we do this, we've got to go, you know, grab the DVDs we want to watch. It's literally and truly a relaxing time. And, in fact, I think that you don't even need to do this, you know, plan for it to be, you know, a weekend thing or a couple of days. I think that to a great extent, one of the things I believe that we need to do is take back our weekends. You know, weekends used to be hanging out, relaxing, having a barbecue, having fun. Weekends now are catching up on all the things that we couldn't get done during the busy work week.
Maybe that's another book, why people are too busy. So, but that's true. I mean, most of the people I know are spending a lot of their weekends doing chores.
Right.
So do you have other examples about how limitation breeds imagination? That's one of the things you said in your book.
Well, I think that, you know, when you have all the resources in the world, well, let me give you an example. When my husband and I decided to get married, we were already on this kind of savvy living path, and we ended up getting married at the Bellagio in Las Vegas, and we were going to be in Las Vegas for a couple of days. And I remember thinking that I had saved all this money, set aside all this money for a trousseau of sorts, a Vegas trousseau. I just wanted to get a couple of different outfits for the trip. And, you know, my typical method of operation when I go shopping is I go directly to the back of the store where the sales racks are, and I kind of start there and work my way up. Well, when I decided that I've got, you know, money set aside for this trip, I want to, you know, buy whatever I want for this trip instead of, you know, looking only for sale items. It's funny how I immediately got overwhelmed and there was no fun in the hunt. You know, it's much more, to me, that's what it had become. It was much more fun to find exactly something that I was going to fall in love with that was on sale rather than having all the clothing options available to me. I just got completely overwhelmed, and within about a week I ended up going back to my regular sales process where I would go to the back store and work my way up, and I got very comfortable around that. There's something about when you have all the options in the world, there's almost like you almost go into paralysis. When you work with, for example, when you work with like a party planner or something like that, it's their job to narrow down your options to maybe 3 to 5 choices, because otherwise you'll spend all your time you know, kind of overwhelmed by everything. But when you have these three options, then from there, everything starts churning and you start thinking about, okay, with this, we can do this. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. And, you know, I think I've read, I can't remember the author, but there was a paradox of choice was like one of the chapters, that you can be overwhelmed by too much choice.
Yes. Yeah. And for me, that almost became, now that I think about it, online radiotherapy, the working around sales, whether I'm shopping for clothes or other things, it helps narrow down my choices, because otherwise I get absolutely overwhelmed. It's tough for me actually to go into a store like a Marshalls, because I'm just kind of like, you know, everything is affordable, but it's almost like it's too much. I can't even see anything because there's just too much on the rack.
It's a lot of stimulation when you go into any store, really. I do want to remind listeners that I'm talking today with Melissa Tozzetti. She's the author of a book called Living the Savvy Life, The Savvy Woman's Guide to Smart Spending and Rich Living. And she also has a website called, what is it, The Savvy Life.
Savvy Life.
It's an online magazine, and you can get lots of great tips there as well, so you might want to visit that website. This is Writer's Voices, and we're on KRUU-FM 100.1. See, so you've done, let's switch gears a little bit and talk about your writing process and how you organize yourself. So you do a lot of blogging, writing, speaking, teaching. You're also a fitness teacher. How do you find time to do all the things you want to do, like spending time with your husband and your son, gardening, traveling? Like, how are you organizing your time? Because it just seems to me like you are having your hands in a lot of pies.
Well, you know, one of the I don't always do it well.
Well, it's nice to know you don't always have to do everything well.
Right. No. You know, one of the things that I do is my to-do lists. Instead of creating to-do lists, I actually put my to-do lists in my calendar. And so a to-do isn't just, you know, an item on a list. It's a scheduled item. So, for example, this morning at 9 o'clock, I had scheduled, you know, write this week's newsletter for the Savvy Life readers and send that out. If I just had that on a to-do list, I probably wouldn't have focused on it and got it done until later today or tomorrow, because it just something it always kind of had a tendency to get in the way.
That's very efficient.
But again, it's not that, you know, I live and die by that that schedule, but it really just helps me kind of put into perspective also how much time I need for things.
That really does sound like a very efficient way to do it. Because then at 10 o'clock or 12 when you were going to do something else, then you can put the newsletter out of your mind because that was for that other block of time, and now you're moving on to whatever it is you had to do, you know, a couple hours later.
Right. And, you know, there's other things that I do. Like my husband and I have guidelines for us as a family where, you know, every morning I make my son breakfast and have breakfast with him, and that's our time together, and that's very, very important. On the weekends when we're not traveling, when we're at home, we both cut off whatever we're doing if we happen to be working at 5 o'clock. And at 5 o'clock, we're making dinner together. We've got our movie set aside. We're big fans of movies, obviously. but if we don't do that, it's just so easy for us to let everything else get in the way. So we have to schedule the fun stuff as well, which is kind of pathetic to say, but if we don't do it, everything else just has a tendency to get in the way.
Well, focusing still on you a little, I'm curious with your two interests, your physical fitness training interest, and do you see some connections between teaching people how to live a savvy life financially and teaching them how to live wisely in terms of their health?
You know, I joke around that, you know, cash or calories, my message is still the same. Make what you have go as far as possible. Just to give your listeners a little background, our family business is martial arts. My husband owns a mixed martial arts school in Foster City, California called Fearless Fitness. And he and I both have long, long backgrounds in martial arts. We both have been doing it for about 16 years. And so I moonlight at his school, and I teach fitness classes as well as kung fu and you know, basic, you know, fighting, mixed martial arts fighting. And it's so much of that translates. Again, like I said, you know, when we work with our fitness clients, it's about, you know, you have a, for your body type, for your body structure, you have a certain amount of calories that you can take in on a daily basis without gaining weight. So use those calories to the best of your advantage. Put fuel in your body. If you're going to have a treat, make it something you really want, not something you just kind of mindlessly grabbed. So it's the same idea with food, with money, right? Make it something that you really want versus just kind of mindlessly consuming.
Interesting. So they really are very closely connected.
Very much so. And you know, for me, I love my life because I sit here and I write from, you know, about 7 in the morning until about four in the afternoon about this kind of savvy lifestyle, and then I get to switch gears in the evenings, head over to the martial arts school, and be very and physically enacted.
you really need that, because sitting, or maybe you have a standing desk.
No, yeah. I have a sitting.
Well,
desk.
sitting is actually.
I should actually get one of those that I can elevate, but I try to make up for it in the evenings by punching and kicking things.
Yeah. Well, that's good too. So, and how does your son fit into this then?
You know, it's funny. He has been at the at our martial arts school since he was 3 weeks old, and he's just we are so blessed. He is just such a great kid. He takes a couple of the classes at the school, and we just had a moment with him. He just turned five 2 weeks ago, and we had that first lesson about money, and we took him. He received some money for his birthday. We explained to him that he should save maybe 20% of it to spend it another time, and so he set that money aside. And then we went to the toy store, and I was so impressed because we weren't trying to guide him. We just kind of explained to him, you know, here's how much money you have. You could buy this if you want to. You could buy this if you want to. Maybe that's a little bit outside. If you want that, you're going to have to save up for it. That kid went through the entire store and picked exactly what he wanted, even though he could afford other things and other things that he had kind of talked about previously purchasing or wanting. He was very specific about what he wanted, bought it, and he has played with that thing every single day since he brought it home. So
well, that's great.
So it's very satisfying to me that, and I'm trying very hard to teach him about money without putting fear of money in him, that idea of we can't afford it. You know, it's the idea of, well, you just need to save up for it. Does that make sense?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So I'm curious about you still. So, because it sounds like you have had, I mean, I can understand you got into maybe this fitness through your husband, or you met him because you had kind of an interest in it. You probably wouldn't have started a studio alone, sounds like.
You know, ironically, I actually started martial arts before he did.
Oh, really?
He just happens to be a natural at it, and I had to work a lot harder. Before I moved to the Bay Area, I was actually a competitive fencer, Olympic-style fencing. When I moved here, I couldn't justify taking the fencing courses out here. They were too far away.
Oh, fencing. Fencing, like with swords, right? Sword fencing?
Like sword fencing, yeah.
Oh, cool.
And so I started thinking about the idea of taking martial arts, and I got into it, and about 3 months after I did, my husband got into it. And within about a year and a half, they actually hired him as a full-time instructor because he is just a natural. He's a phenomenal teacher. And he worked for that school for about 12 years, and then we decided to that it was time to leave and do our own thing. And so that's how that kind of evolved. And so it is the family business.
And the family business is Fearless Fitness.
In fact, okay. If you want to check out some great videos of the school, if you go to fearlessfitness.us, and you can see a video of the school. You can see videos of some of our fight days and things like that.
It's a
fun place. We've got a great community there.
Are we going to see you?
You will see me. You will actually see me talking. I do a little promo on the homepage.
Are you fighting also?
Not this time, no.
Oh, too bad. Okay. But I'm curious about, like, what did you get trained in? Did you go to college, and did you get a degree in, like, writing or finance?
Does School of Hard Knocks count?
Absolutely.
Okay, yeah. I've got a master's. No, my whole life has really kind of kept guiding me towards writing. And, I think like a lot of people originally, I wanted to be a fiction writer. I had taken some classes at community college. I'd taken some extension classes through Berklee College. But really, it wasn't until I started writing the online magazine that, I think that if you want to be a writer, you just have to write. And the blogging world has, there are so many great writers out there, and blogging really, I don't think that there's any better way to become a better writer than that. I am a whole different writer than I was, even just a couple years ago, even on the other side of the book. I'm so much more confident in my writing, and I think that, in this day and age, blogging has really changed the way writing is accepted. It's no longer do you say we are, you say were. If you say we are in a blogging world, people, it doesn't sound right anymore. And I think that taking classes is great, but you really have to believe in your own voice. and your own writing style and hone that, and not let anybody else tell you how you should write. Learn the structure, learn the basics, but from there, you got to just take it and go.
So I need to break this down in my mind a little bit. So you're a self-taught writer, fencer. I mean, I'm just having a hard time. It's sort of like the Renaissance woman on steroids or something. It's really...
Yeah.
So what did you do to teach yourself to write?
As I said, I did take classes, at community colleges at the beginning. One of the things that I do when I write, I read out loud what I write.
Oh, yeah, that's very powerful.
And if it doesn't sound right verbally, then I know it isn't correct and I need to go back and reword it. And I think that when I first started writing, I was very stingy with my words. And that could be coming from a time when you wrote on a typewriter, not on a word processor. But, now I'm so willing to write something and never publish it. I'm so willing, I need to write. It's just a part of kind of who I am now. And so it's just from literally writing for the last, no pun intended, for the last 10 years that it just kind of, I'm the writer now that I am, and I hope to be an even better writer 10 years from now.
And so that's how long ago you started your the Savvy Life website?
The print publication, the Savvy Life website started in 2006. The first print publication started in 2004. But I literally started started creating the magazine in 2001.
So did you also have to get up to speed on technology, or were you pretty familiar with technology?
If you talk to my IT guy, he'll be laughing right now.
This is Kevin?
I know how to word process. I know how to use Excel and PowerPoint, but that's pretty much the extent. The gentleman who is very patient and helps me with my website, he tells me that when I get a degree in HTML, then I can, work on that end, but otherwise just stick to what I'm good at, which is writing about, the Savvy Life.
But yet you two have a great working relationship, it sounds like, because you did this book together as well as the continuing work on the website.
So my IT guy is actually a different person.
He's
the guy that runs the background or the back end of our online magazine. His name is Mark Parker. He's phenomenal and a longtime friend. Kevin Gibbons is my co-author, and he and I also have just a fantastic relationship. We've been friends for about 20 years.
That's great.
Yeah.
So we don't have too much time left. Do you have some final parting words of advice? I'll just remind listeners that you are Melissa Tozzetti, co-author of Living the Savvy Life, The Savvy Woman's Guide to Smart Spending and Rich Living. So do you have any more tips for us on living the savvy, balanced life?
The one thing that I try to express every time that I have an opportunity to speak is there's a lot of fear around money, and especially when you find yourself in a really bad financial situation, and we have a tendency to beat ourselves up pretty bad. You don't need that. You recognize that the situation that you're in right now, do what you can to educate yourself, to get yourself out of it. Take steps every day to get yourself out of it, but you cannot continue to beat yourself up, because you will only downward spiral. There is hope. You absolutely can get out of the situation that you've been in. I've worked with people there's one case in particular, the woman I worked with was $100,000 in consumer debt. That's credit card debt and student loans. And we were able to get her out of it. So no situation is so dire that it can't be resolved. And there is hope, and there you can live a savvy life. It just decide that you're going to do it.
Okay, so thank you for being with us today, Melissa. And if people need more information, you can read the book, Living the Savvy Life.
Thank you so much for having me on. It was an absolute pleasure talking to you.
Bye now.
Thank you.
Writer's Voices is hosted, produced, and engineered by Monica Hadley, Caroline Kilborn, Cheryl Fusco-Johnson, and Corey Hickenbottom. Archives are available at KRUUFM.com and writersvoices.com. Writer's Voices is a production of KRUULP 100.1 FM, broadcasting from the Cultural District in Fairfield, Iowa.